Well, the end of the growing season can seem a little bit sad. As I look at my straw bale garden, my straw bales are pretty well sort of disappearing almost as I watch them. And that's kind of sad. But on the other hand, you know what? It's beautiful. We've got some beautiful weather and had some beautiful weather across Wisconsin. Great time to be in outdoors. And there are still opportunities for growth in your garden. What about herbs? We'll talk about how to harvest and preserve them today, among other things, with Sharon Morrissey. Sharon, the UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. She always has lots of great information to share. And Sharon, great to have you back.
Well, it's always my pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And how can we have fresh herbs through winter?
Well, in most parts of the state, we're either forecasted to have a frost or we've already had a killing frost. Down here in the tropics, the southeastern region of the state, we are expecting a good hard killing frost this weekend. So getting out there today, tonight, and taking care of picking as many of those herbs, cutting as many of those herbs as possible is a good idea. Once they've frozen, their potency is decreased because the oils are not as significant in them then. So getting them harvested as soon as you can and then bringing them indoors so that you can then preserve them. And preservation is really pretty easy. You can dry herbs, save some for fresh, then dry some herbs, and you can put some in ice cubes in the freezer or put them just in bags in the freezer. You can also make butters and vinegars out of them. So a lot of ways to preserve those so that you can use them for a long time to come during the winter.
And save you a little money, too. I mean, if you have to go buy them in the store.
Oh, it's amazing how much they cost. But then as you start working with the herbs, you'll find that it is pretty labor-intensive. And so you can kind of appreciate the manufacturing process that has to go into, you know, commercially preparing herbs and, you know, drying them,
sure.
Stripping them from the stems, making sure that they're clean and it's just the leaves that are in there, you know, bottling and all of that. So it is a little easier for us, but it is a little bit labor intensive, but it's certainly worth it, and it's a very, very fragrant activity.
And you know, and it's fun too. I'll take the stems and I will put them in the grill.
Yeah.
And that you get, that's a nice aroma that you get when you do that.
It really is. People think that that's the debris, the throwaway part after you've stripped the leaves off of them. And actually, when you first dry them, it's probably better to put them into plastic bags or something without stripping the leaves off. And then don't release those oils until you're ready to use them. So strip the leaves once you're ready to put them into your dish. And then when you have those dry stems left over, you know, save them up and throw them into the grill as you're cooking a steak or some chicken or some fish. And it really does add a nice flavor.
Oh, absolutely. Do you grow chives, by the way? I like chives.
I love chives. I really do. It's one that I do know how to use very easily. There's lots of things that I would use chives in. Very easy to grow. I don't think you can go wrong with chives. But one little trick that people may not know is about digging up a little chunk of your chives, putting them into a pot, and bringing them into the house and harvesting until they're not looking so great anymore because we don't have enough light in our houses to grow herbs very well. Not many people really have that really good, intense light. Supplemental light is really what would be required to grow them as well as they grow outdoors. So then once you've been harvesting these chives from your pot indoors for a while, then once it's cold out and it's freezing weather, put that pot out in the yard and leave it outside for, you know, a couple weeks. And then bring it back in, water it, and because it has that soil ball, it probably has protected it for that short a period of time. And you may be able to get those chives to grow again and send up some new shoots that will be in a little bit better condition than the ones that you were getting before. And then you can do it again, possibly.
That's pretty cool.
You know, give it a try.
I had never heard that before. That's really fun. Fun thing to try. Larry in Janesville has a question for you, though. Let's go there. Larry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've never grown Brussels sprouts before. I've been growing backyard vegetables for a long time on a southern slope in Janesville. And I have Brussels sprout plants that are 4 foot tall, very vigorous, vegetative growth, but the buds are the size of a pea.
Oh,
man, is that a disappointment?
Yeah, that is. Well, I would question whether they really are the size of a pea all the way down to the base of the stem. If the ones at the bottom are very, very small, I'm not real sure what would have caused that. Usually those are the first ones to start filling in because they're the first ones that were produced as the stem is enlarging. So those ones in the bottom part of the stem will be sizing up nicely. But then as you get toward the top, they're much, much, much smaller. And the trick with that is to cut out the top quarter or third of the height of the plant in about the end of August, middle to end of August. And when you do that, what that's doing is removing that apical bud. That's the bud at the very tip, the terminal bud on the plant. That bud produces a hormone that then goes down the stem and prevents the buds below it from filling out very well. The lower those are, the farther from the terminal bud they are, the more they will enlarge. So as the stem grows, the lowest ones will enlarge. But when you cut that tip off, you're removing that apical bud completely. There's no more hormone being produced to run down the stem on the inside to prevent those from enlarging. And this year, our plants responded within about 2 weeks. You could really see a difference. So too late to do it now for this year, but that's one of the tricks of growing Brussels sprouts is to cut out that growing point.
Excellent. Well, that would account for it. The auxin is certainly powerful.
Yes, it is.
There you go, Larry. You and I learned something today. And, you know, I love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, I do, too. And, so many good ways to cook them. A lot of people had an aversion to them because I think so often our parents maybe cooked them until they were really, really mushy and yucky. And we had a lot of frozen vegetables when I was a kid and, you know, commercially frozen vegetables. And you know, those were mush before they went in the package, I think. And then my mother would cook them very, very well. And so I didn't like Brussels sprouts. But fresh Brussels sprouts are spectacular.
Oh, they're wonderful. And grilled even better.
Yeah. I've never done them grilled, but I do
kind
of charbroil them in a pan with just a little bit of olive oil and salt. And then I cut them in half, and I put them face down into that pan once the oil and salt are hot, and let them cook that way until they're almost black, because that's really caramelizing the sugars that are in them. And then put in a little apple juice or orange juice or even some chicken broth or something, and put the lid back on and just let them steam that way until they're soft or tender. And, I learned that method and discovered that it's the greatest way to do them.
Oh, that sounds absolutely wonderful. Well, I'm going to try that for
All right.
Viv, thanks, Larry, by the way, for calling. From Janesville, how about Vivian in Green Bay? Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Larry. Love your show.
Thank you.
I have herbs, rosemary, chives, a variety of things outdoors, and I would like to bring them in, but I have three house cats who are very likely to chomp on them. And I'm wondering about the dangers of some of the herbs to pets in the home.
Well, I don't know, because I'm not a vet. I don't know anything about animal, dietary systems and stuff, immune systems and stuff. But I don't think any of them would be poisonous to them. I don't think you need to worry about that aspect of it. If you're concerned about them getting to the plants and therefore eating the leaves that you want to be using, that's a different story. It isn't easy, but to try to have something that provides an odor in and around the pots to keep the cats away from them, you can also mechanically or physically keep them away by putting them in places where they can't reach. And I know that's hard with cats, but maybe putting something around them that they don't like to step on.
Crunch up some aluminum foil.
Oh, there's a good idea.
I have successfully kept my cats away from different areas with just a little crunchy, and not in a tight ball, but just kind of crinkle it up a bit. They will not step on aluminum foil.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Yeah, it's that kind of thing. But as far as I know, they aren't poisonous. But I would check with a vet.
Yeah,
really, a veterinarian.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And actually, there's a poison prevention hotline that I can't give you the number because I don't know it. But maybe we'll find that number, and Cheyenne might be able to locate it, and we'll put it up on our Facebook page. Thanks again, Vivian, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question about your garden or maybe about herbs. We've been talking a bit about herbs, but certainly we'll deal with other things as well with our guest today, Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And so give us a call. What about annuals at this time of the year? I've got some annuals out there and wondering what I might do with them.
You know, there are a few options. Obviously, most of our annuals, once we have a freeze at all, that's the end of them. And having them in a protected place when there is going to be a freeze, you know, will help for that day or two. But, you know, pretty soon we're going to have frost all over. So you can take cuttings of herbs, plants, and bring them indoors, herbs as well as other annual plants. And that can work as a way to just sort of carry it over through the winter so that you've got something to plant for the next year of that same plant. You know, if you've found a variety of coleus that you really, really like, or you've got geraniums you want to carry over, or impatiens even, or wax begonias, they can be carried over by taking cuttings. And with cuttings, I mean maybe a 3 or 4 inch piece of the end of a stem. The end of a stem where there isn't a flower is going to be more successful for you. If there's a flower spike at the terminus, it may not be root as vigorously.
Yeah.
So you should try and select stems that don't have flowers on them. And then remove a couple lower leaves. And many things, you can just stick them into a medium or a soil, I'll call it soil with quotes, that will provide some air and some moisture for them. You don't need to use any rooting hormone, but rooting will always be better if you do use some rooting hormone. And I know they do sell small packets of rooting hormone. It doesn't take a lot, especially if you're doing a few cuttings. You don't need to purchase the whole jar of it or something, whatever. So they do produce it in small packets for this purpose. The medium I like to use for cuttings is a 50-50 mixture of vermiculite and perlite. And those are things that are readily available.
Yeah.
They already have them on hand. But it gives a really nice combination of moisture holding and aeration. So the stems don't rot, but they're kept wet. And then, of course, have drainage in the container. And you can use even like Dixie cups or ice cream sundae cups or, you know, from fast food locations, all sorts of things like that to do cuttings. Give them pretty good light. If they have large leaves on them, cut those leaves in half. Leave the leaves on, but cut them in half so that there's not as much demand for water, since there are no roots at this point to provide that water. And eventually that growing point or the side buds will start to open. And if you wonder if the cutting is ready and rooted and ready to pot up into some potting soil, give it a little tug, and if it doesn't come out of the container easily, it probably does have roots and it's ready to move up. So that's one good way to do it.
Yeah,
if you've got a good, bright, sunny window, you might want to try and bring the whole plant indoors. You can cut the plant back pretty severely and let it just survive through the winter. It's not going to produce a whole lot of new leaves, but the goal is really not to have a beautiful house plant as much as it is to get it through to next spring so you can replant it.
Very good advice. You know, I've got a question of my own. I have my lime tree. I'm taking a couple of limes off her today, and there's another half dozen on her. But I need to bring her indoors, and I also should have repotted her about a month ago, and I didn't. Can I repot her?
I mean, you can. It's, you know, maybe not the best time to do
it. No, I know that.
Unfortunately. And, yeah, having done it earlier or waiting until just before it starts to really get vigorous again in the spring when the daylight conditions are better and the temperatures are better. Because if you were to transplant it now, you would make sure that to repot it, you'd make sure to not make it, put it into a much larger pot than it's in right now. And that's kind of a general rule of thumb.
Yeah.
And then not to disturb the roots too much unless the root ball is really, really tightly packed. And if it is, then you can kind of make some slices from top to bottom along that root ball and repot it. But if you can avoid it at this point.
Maybe I'll wait till spring.
I'll try, yeah.
Okay. Well, she's still cranking out the limes. So.
Yeah, sounds like she's happy enough.
Yep. Pete in Wales, thanks a lot for calling. Your turn.
Hi. I've been wondering what the effect of low-E windows are in the house as we move our plants inside. What effect does that low E have compared to the old single glazing that we just had?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question, and I'm afraid I don't know a detailed answer to that. But, you know, it's the spectrum of light that does get through the windows and the quantity of light that gets through windows that makes the difference. And it's the spectrum that plants are looking for is higher in the red and the blues. And I think some of the reds are being blocked out more with the low E glass. But I'm not sure about that. And the manufacturer's website might be a good place to go to find out more about that spectrum, particularly since one of the reasons for that product are to, you know, reduce the amount of energy loss. And so they probably will have more information about that spectrum.
In fact, I'm pretty sure most of them do.
Yeah.
From another show, I think we talked about that.
So good.
That's
yeah.
That's good advice, really. If you've got the name of your window, I would go to their site for sure.
And just remember that it is the blue and the red light that they need the most of. But if it cuts down on the intensity of light too, then it probably is going to affect how possible it is to grow plants, how well you can grow plants with those windows.
Thanks again, Pete, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Sharon Morrissey, our guest today. She's the UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll be talking about growing healthy houseplants in almost any kind of condition. That'll be next week on Garden Talk. Right now, visiting with Sharon Morrissey, and we could probably deal with houseplants a bit too here. I'm sure she knows a lot about them, but we'll take any question that you have. We started out by talking about preserving and harvesting herbs. We've talked a bit about carrying over geraniums to save them over winter and some of the other flowers as well. So give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Cheyenne did post up on our Facebook page the American Association of Poison Control Centers for an earlier caller. And it's an easy number to remember, actually. It's 1-800-222-1222. So lots of twos. 222-1222. That's the number for that hotline. Facebook question from Kathy, who has lemongrass growing in her garden. Any advice on preserving it so she could use it over the winter?
Well, again, it's a matter of not having enough light in your home, and that's the problem for most of these things. Even if you've had it in a relatively shady spot, it probably was getting more light than you have, even in a good southern sunny window in your house. So carrying it on to grow it in your home over the winter is hard, if not impossible, to do. But if you can bring it indoors, you know, cut it back completely, remove a few of the, you know, the outer stems. You can even divide it up and save what you can, but save a chunk of it with some roots on it, and put that into a pot and just put it someplace where it's not going to freeze. Maybe in a basement or something. You don't need to continually water it and try and keep it growing. You're just trying to keep that root system hydrated so that it survives through the winter. Lemongrass is not hardy, and so it does either need to be brought indoors. And that's kind of an iffy proposition, but sometimes it'll work. And then plant it out again in the spring. Because when you purchase lemongrass from a garden center or from mail order or something, you usually get a relatively small plant. It does grow rather vigorously, and you can get a pretty good-sized clump of it going within a season, but then you have to start over again the next year. And if you can get that clump to overwinter indoors in a basement, or you might be able to get by with doing it in an attached garage, in a box, or even in like a cooler or a styrofoam cooler.
Oh, sure.
Put it in a box or a cooler, but in the box you would need to provide the insulation yourself. So you would have to stuff it with packing peanuts or rags and or straw or leaves or something. Really pack it good and cover the whole pot and roots, stem and all. You know, you've cut the stem down, but cover the whole thing. And try and keep it over the winter that way if you've got space in a garage to do it, so you've provided the insulation.
Nancy in Manitowoc has a comment. Let's go there. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Larry. I had watched a PBS program last year on spices around the world, and they pointed out that it's legal to take out a huge percentage of the oils from many spices and herbs, something like 60%, I'm not real sure on the number, before it is prepared for commercial purchases as a dried herb or spice in the store. So big benefit to growing your own.
Wow.
I've never heard that. And I guess I've always assumed that the more intense fragrance from the herbs has been just because they were fresh and just because they were very, very recently harvested versus maybe purchasing them commercially. They've been dried, processed, packaged, shipped. May take a lot longer. So that's an interesting concept that they're removing some of these oils before they prepare them and sell them for use as an herb in their cooking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, especially with the popularity of aromatherapy and essential oils for other uses.
Well, that's good. Thanks, Nancy. I hadn't heard that. Appreciate it very much. I missed that.
Yeah, I think at the very beginning of the show, Larry, you mentioned that it is economical also. For anybody who has grown herbs, you know how large the plant will get in one season, how much it will produce in one season, and that goes for many of our herbs, both annual and perennial. And you can grow huge quantities of herbs. The trick, then, is processing it to preserve it, because it does, as I mentioned, it is kind of labor intensive, but it is real possible to grow huge amounts of herbs for virtually no cost. Many of them you can start from seed. Even the ones that you purchase as transplants may cost, you know, $3-4, and you get, I mean, you pay three times that for a jar of it in the store, maybe. So again, you get a lot more out of it. So if you can manage it, you know, space-wise, time-wise, and then space for storing it after it's preserved, it is really the way to go.
Diane in Beaver Dam has a couple of questions. Diane, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. With the cold weather coming down on us tonight, how long can I keep my cruciferous vegetables in the garden? And then also, I have an apple tree, and they're a late apple. Is it safe to keep them on still tonight, or should I go out and pick them now?
I don't think you should let the apples freeze. I think they will be affected. Now, the ones on the interior of the plant may be protected enough from a single frost or a couple of frosts, but I wouldn't wait. Those would be the priority to get out off the tree before it freezes. As far as your cruciferous vegetables, that is things like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, kale, let's see what other things people might have out at this point.
Brussels sprouts,
yes, definitely. Most of those are actually improved, their flavor is improved by the frost, so it's a good thing to have a frost while they're still in the ground, so purposely leave them out in the garden to be frosted. But how long you can leave them, it sort of depends on what the weather conditions have been, and if you're mulching them or not. You may be able to mulch them lightly, you know, around the base you could put pretty heavy mulches on, but you could also mulch the tops with straw, probably would be the easiest thing to use. And, you know, I've heard of people carrying them through all the way until Thanksgiving or later, depending on what our weather conditions have been like.
They don't need to be covered right now, then?
No, they definitely don't. Like I say, purposely leave them outside to get frosted, so that does improve the flavor. It actually makes them sweeter.
Mm-hmm. There we
Thank
go.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks, Diane, for calling. Appreciate it. Annette in Wisconsin Rapids, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard something, and I never tried to find out if it's true or not. And lo and behold, I came across your show. Thank you there. my question is, I heard that you can preserve herbs by microwaving them.
Yes, you can. You can dry herbs in the microwave. I don't have or know of any great resources for finding out how long you do which herbs, what volume you use, etc., but you can dry them in the microwave. What I would do is I would Google search for preserving herbs in the microwave, and then after that put site:// .edu.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the sites that come up from your search will be educational sites. Most of them will be extension service sites from around the country, or they will be universities. And so that information is pretty reliable. You're getting some research-based information that way. I know we don't have any extension publications on drying and preserving herbs. You know, we might have something in the publications in the learning store in the home and family section instead of the lawn and garden section.
Oh.
Because they do, you know, the nutrition and home preservation section, they have information about preserving all kinds of things. And they might have something there about herbs. So
that's a look.
And that is the Learning Store, LEARNING Store, all one word, .uwex.edu. And then when that opens, if you go to Home and Family over on the left-hand side, select that. And then under, let's see, food and nutrition.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of look through that and see if there is a publication on herbs. And maybe we can let you know later if we find that and post that. Otherwise, I would do a search and use the site://.edu. And that's always a good way to search the Internet for good, reliable information.
And thanks again, Annette, for calling. Appreciate it. Holly sent us a nice photo on Facebook of a strawberry. It is beautiful. She says, what should I do with my potted strawberries? Can you believe I ate three just a couple of days ago?
Oh, I I did the same thing this year. I was successful finally in doing that in containers and using everbearing or day neutral varieties. And we had a late crop, and we still have a couple on ours at our Master Gardener garden too. If it's an everbearing plant, you can probably carry it over for a second year. A day neutral plant may not do very well the next year, may not produce very much the next year, but it's kind of worth a try. And for that, I would, you know, they do need to have a cold period just like they do in the ground. They have to have a winter, so, but they can't tolerate having freezing and thawing of the container itself above ground because it is not well insulated enough for the roots. So you have a couple of options, and this is true for anything that is would be a hardy plant if you around your area, if you were growing it in the ground to protect the roots. That's when you can sink the pot into the garden, into an empty space in your garden, dig a hole, put the pot in, don't bury it much deeper than the pot itself, and then push the soil back up over the pot, and then cover the whole thing with a bunch of straw. That or evergreen boughs or dry leaves from, you know, fall leaves from your trees, that will help to insulate it. If you don't have space like that, you can put it in a cardboard box in a unheated garage and insulate it within the box, as I mentioned earlier. So that's what I'm going to do with both of our containers. One is an everbearer and one is day neutral, and I'm going to see if both of them can make it through and if either one produces well next year.
Very, very cool. And thanks again for calling. Lynette in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Lynette. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Good morning. I have acquired a potted mini rose bush.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not get it into the ground in time, so I'm wondering if an under-the-cabinet light will be enough light for it to survive over the winter or what I
endure. It might, but I don't think it's really too late. Even though we're having a frost, the problem would be keeping it, because it's been growing indoors, Has it been out on a porch or something, or has it been indoors?
Actually, it has been outside until about a week ago.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, it's probably pretty well acclimated to the increasing cold temperatures, and you can still plant it. The soil won't be frozen and too cold to work until after Thanksgiving, probably. And okay. So as long as you can work that soil, what we find is that that soil is warmer than the air temperatures, and that those warm soil conditions and cool air temperatures help to stimulate root production to help to get it established. So I would go ahead and plant it where you want it. I hesitate to just leave it out in the open. Well, I guess you probably can because it's been out in the open. As far as the stems and stuff, you don't have to cover them. But then wait until the ground has frozen, the plant has lost all of its leaves, and it's gone dormant, and then put some straw around it or leaves around it and maybe protect it for this first winter. But mini roses are quite hardy in our area, and in Dane County, too, I'm sure they would be.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And like I say, it's not too late to plant.
Lynette, thank you very much for calling. And Anne in Madison? Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have two plants that I bring in every fall. One is a New Guinea impatiens, and the other is a hibiscus. And they're pretty big, and I trim them, or I cut them both back when I bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
But I had two questions. One, do I need to be pinching off the bloom, because they bloom all winter, but little by little they lose their leaves until there are almost no leaves left when spring gets here.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then my other question was, do I need to replace the bulbs in my plant lights every year?
Oh, that's a good question. I have not heard that you need to.
No, I haven't heard that either.
Yeah, but I wonder if they do get weaker, but I don't think so. Are they just regular fluorescent bulbs, like a cool white and a warm white or something?
I don't know whether they're fluorescent bulbs, mm-hmm. and on the box when I buy them, it says plant and aquarium light.
Oh, okay. So it probably is a little bit different spectrum than just the plain fluorescent bulbs that we use for indoor lighting. But, you know, not that that matters, but I thought if you have the packaging in the container, it may even state in there that after so many hours of use that, you know, the intensity will diminish or something, especially when it's for plants and aquariums.
Right. I'll look and see,
Mm-hmm.
And then for the leaves or the
flowers
on the hibiscus and the New Guinea impatiens, can I keep the blooms or do I need to pinch those off so that the leaves have more energy?
I think the flowers themselves are not draining them as much as if they are allowed, if they produce any fruit. And I don't think hibiscus or in New Guinea impatiens will produce any kind of a seed pod or anything. They don't do that outdoors, so they're not going to do it indoors. And that's what really saps their energy. I think since you've been doing it for several years and you've been pretty successful, you can continue, or you could just do it as a trial this year and pick off the flower buds as they form. Don't let them come into flower, even so that they don't have to put the energy into the flower. But I don't think there's any rule of thumb with that, with those plants. I think it's more the seed pod that is that some plants form that takes more energy than the flowers.
Okay.
But flowering, you know, I think about it with strawberries, and one of the ways that you get strawberries to produce later crops and to be ever-bearing and such is to pinch off the flowers and fruits for a while at least. So I don't know. I guess I would maybe give it a try this year and see if that improves the situation and you have more leaves on the plant longer. That's what you're aiming.
Because it's a race every year. It's like, oh, I hope spring gets here soon because I almost don't have any leaves left. And then, you know, right at the very end, I'm able to put them out and then they bush out again.
It sounds like you've got the system pretty well worked out and you've been successful. So that's good news. You're doing it right.
Thanks a lot, Ann, for calling. Appreciate it. Sharon Morrissey, our guest today, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Sharon Morrissey, horticulture agent for UW Extension in Milwaukee County, and an open line or two. Give you a call. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Post up on our Facebook page. If you've got a garden-related photo, we'd love to see those as well. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. So that's where to go. And we have callers. Let's go to Pat in East Troy next. Thanks, Pat, for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. This is the last minute, and I was just about to make a mistake. I'm trying to decide what my hydrangeas would like in order to make them bloom next year. They did not bloom this year. They're 1, 2, and 3 years old. I've been investing in them on a regular basis. But I really wanted the flowers, not just the foliage.
Yeah, right, right. So I have a couple of questions for you. Do you know what kind of hydrangeas they are? The variety names or cultivar names?
They said they were perennials, so that's all I really remember.
Okay. All hydrangeas that, well, no. There are hydrangeas that we grow here that the flower buds are not hardy over the winter. Therefore, the foliage will grow beautifully every year, but they will never flower.
Uh-oh.
But, so they are perennial, and so it really does depend. There are lots and lots of varieties these days that that will flower, but maybe they don't flower. I don't know how to put this.
As well?
Let's go. If they're a hardy hydrangeas with flower buds that are hardy, you should get flowers every year. One of the things that will stop them from flower, prevent them from flowering, is if there's too much shade. Too much shade. You know, we think of hydrangeas as shade plants. They like partial shade. They need to get some sun. They can tolerate quite a bit of sun. They usually don't tolerate really dense shade very well. Does that seem to be the problem?
That could be it. I have about five big old oak trees hanging over them. The oak trees are getting kind of puny looking, but it probably doesn't let much sun through in the summertime.
No.
Yeah, so I would try moving them, and you could still move them this fall. It's not too late to do that.
Okay.
So you could move them to a sunnier site in your yard and see if that improves the situation. If it doesn't, it probably is because they're one of these macrophylla types that are not typically, that are not always hardy in our area.
Mm.
I have a couple of other questions.
Mm-hmm.
Same piece, different theme. I have just transplanted my, my notes are so messed up.
Easter lily, were you going to talk about?
My peonies.
Oh, your peonies.
Oh, okay.
Now, how far back, or should I cut them back, having just transplanted and split the ones my daughter gave me?
You could wait until they freeze down so that all possible nourishment that's going to move into the roots can have a chance to move into the roots. But as soon as they freeze down, you can cut those stems off.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Pat. Appreciate your call very much. And, wow, we have lots of Facebook questions, lots of callers online. We have Dorothy in Green Bay up next with a question, so let's go there. Dorothy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I just dug up some tiger lily bulbs to give to a friend, and they're quite large. How deep should they be planted now in the new location?
Probably about 6 inches.
6 inches. And what about fertilizer and water? Should I do that? Should they do that also?
You should definitely water and let me think about it. Yeah, if you used a fertilizer that was high in phosphorus, that's that middle number.
All right.
And not real high in the first number, nitrogen.
All right, I'll go
that. That should help to stimulate some root development.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
well, thank
a good
you very
time.
Much.
Good.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Nancy in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. I have a couple of poinsettia plants. I had them outside all summer. They look really nice. They're nice and green. What the heck should I do with them now?
I hope you have room in your house to bring them indoors.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got room to bring them indoors, put them in a good sunny window and keep them growing well. And then I'd have to do the calculations. We're probably getting close to the time when you're going to have to start providing a whole night of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And some people do that by putting boxes over them or putting them into a closet at night and taking them out in the morning. But it really has to be done religiously every single day. Now, I know of people in my office and poinsettias we've had in our office that we've carried over, and we don't do a thing to them. And some of them do actually form the red bracts without having these dark periods, completely dark periods. So I think some of the newer varieties of poinsettias will color up. But, traditionally and typically that's how poinsettias work. They have to have that dark period. And they have to have that for,
30 days, is it?
Is it? I don't remember.
I do remember that if you miss one day, then you have to start the number over again.
Yeah, and they even say with a closet, if the crack under the door allows light in, that defeats the purpose. If you're putting a box over them, you have to make sure that it's, solid against the ground so that no light is coming in underneath because they can be very, very fussy. But then also, like I said, we've had several in our office over the years where they've colored up again all by themselves, and they've been right by a window that has a street light outside, so at night it's not dark. So I don't.
Maybe that's what helped.
That would be really unusual.
I was also going to tell you about hibiscus. Our son died back in 2000. It'll be 15 years now.
Aww.
And one of the gifts that we got was a hibiscus plant. And so I kept that going. ever since. And, of course, this year, all the leaves fell off of it. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I forgot to water it upstairs, and I might be gone. So I brought it outside, set it out there, talked to it a lot. And all of a sudden, I saw little buds. And it's, right now, it is full of leaves. And I had trimmed it back to dead branches, and it looks beautiful. And it's like resurrection.
I'm so happy
for you. You know, it just gives you rebirth.
Yeah. Plants are so amazing.
That's my story about the hibiscus.
Well, thank you.
It's a wonderful story, and thank you so much, Nancy, for sharing it with us. I really appreciate it. We have more callers online. We have had a question from Melinda in New Franklin. We have a raspberry bush, or we have raspberry bushes. The long branches don't have any fruit, but the little branches do. What do we do to get fruit on the large branches?
Well, that's an interesting question. That must be a fall-bearing raspberry. And the fall-bearing raspberry, the tall branches would be... Now, I'm thinking about this because the new stems that are produced in the spring will produce a fall crop, but they will also produce a crop again in the spring. So at this time of the year... The ones that are flowering and fruiting are the new canes. And anything that hasn't flowered yet probably is not going to, I would say. Because it's the same stems that flower fall and then again in spring. So the tall stems should be cut back.
Yeah, get rid of them.
And actually, the way we recommend dealing with fall-blooming raspberries or fall-bearing raspberries is to cut all the stems down once they're done bearing in the fall. And that way, you won't have a spring crop, but all the stems that come up next year will produce fruit in the fall of next year. So you'll have a larger fall crop, but no spring crop. No summer crop, I should say.
Yeah, no summer.
So it makes it so that you can grow summer-bearing raspberries for your summer crop and then fall-bearing raspberries for the fall crop and have a good crop on both. Otherwise, you have two kind of puny crops if you're just doing fall-bearing. So that's what I would suggest is that once they're done bearing right now, just cut everything down.
You know, I had a little homemade raspberry jam this morning on a piece of toast, and it was wonderful.
Oh, and raspberries are one of the ones that are very worth growing yourself. Not only do they taste wonderful, but they're not cheap in the grocery store.
No, they're not. They're definitely not cheap.
But, you know, people complain about raspberries because they do take up a lot of space. If you don't control them, and that's the secret, you can't just let them keep suckering and suckering and suckering and filling in and spreading out and out and out. The idea is to keep them in a row, cut everything beyond the row out and keep it removed. If you can grow grass or turf on both sides of the row, that will reduce the suckering out into the grass. And then after they're done fruiting every year, prune back. Religiously, prune back hard. Take out many of the stems, leaving only about four stems that haven't flowered yet per foot of row. And if you do that, and, you know, cut everything else out, and if you do that, you can keep raspberries just in a row. I have a six-foot-long row of raspberries that is 2.5-3 feet wide that I have been growing in the same place since 2009, and this year we got 15 pounds of raspberries off of that.
Wow.
So in that small a bed, 6 feet long, 3 feet wide, we get 15 pounds of raspberries. So it's all in how you train them and manage them.
That is, that's a good yield. That is a very good yield. Peter and Madison, what's on your mind? Hi.
Hey, how's it going? I have two pawpaw trees, and one of them is in a good spot. One of them we may have made a bad decision on the spot, and I'm wondering if I can still transplant that one.
How old is it?
It's had a sad life. It's about 4 years old, but I accidentally cut it over with a lawnmower. And then, so it's on its second life, and it's about 2 feet tall.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I would say you can definitely transplant that. I would try and take as large a amount of the roots as you possibly can, and you'll probably find that the roots are kind of larger than the top would warrant, you know, because you had cut it down once, it had already grown a good-sized root system, and then you cut it down and grew again. So it's probably got a pretty good-sized root system, and I would take as much of those roots as you possibly can. And you could dig that now and move it. Fall is a good time to plant for transplanting.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have lots of callers on online. Are there, at this point in the program, anything that you're going to do this weekend in the garden that we ought to be doing?
One of the things I'm going to do is get my containers inside and all of my yard art, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The things that will soak up moisture cannot stay outside. So any containers that are porous at all can't stay outside because they will crack over the winter. And the same thing with some of my statuary, the little statues and stuff. You can put them into an unheated garage. I'm going to put some of mine in the shed. They can take the cold, but just not if they're wet.
Not if they're wet. Sharon Morrissey, our guest today. Sharon is the University of Wisconsin Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. And it's always a pleasure to have her with us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And for this edition of Garden Talk, we're visiting with Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. She always has lots of great information to share, and it's wonderful to have her with us again. You may have questions about what's going on in your lawn or garden. I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Sharon, I read you had a really nice piece about getting your lawn ready for cleanup as winter draws near. And one thing that I noted that I thought, I guess this is new, related to fertilizing, the Halloween fertilizing is no longer recommended.
That's right. It is quite a change from what has been being recommended for probably a couple decades. They'd have conducted research at the O.J. Noor Research Facility, Turfgrass Research Facility at the UW, and they have found that the nitrogen that is supplied to lawns anytime after about the 1st of October, is very little of it is absorbed after that point. In fact, I think the statistics are the data showed that around October 1st, if you apply a nitrogen fertilizer, about 80% of that nitrogen is used, is taken up by the plant. However, if you wait till the 15th of October, it's only about 20% of it that's taken up.
Wow.
So that's quite a difference. Not only is it kind of a waste of fertilizer, your lawn still gets some, but where's that other 80% going?
Yeah.
And we know that nitrogen is a very soluble nutrient, and so it dissolves in water, and it then is leached through the soil down into the groundwater, and it can potentially run off and be carried into streams, lakes and streams, and cause potential pollution problems, too. So the recommendation has been officially changed by the UW turfgrass scientists to make your last fertilizer application for the year around October 1st.
And I didn't, so I'm going to have to wait.
I thought of that this morning myself.
Well, so we're both guilty.
Yeah.
But I'll just wait till spring.
Yeah.
Start over again.
And again, we still don't recommend fertilizing in the spring until Memorial Day.
Right. Yep. Yep. The first, that's usually when I apply first time in spring.
Yeah. We had a wonderful year for our lawns in Wisconsin this year. We had plenty of moisture in the Milwaukee area and the southeast area of Wisconsin. We did not have the lawns go dormant ever. We had a period there where it got a little warm and dry, but they still stayed green enough. They were just getting to where I was starting to think, maybe they will go dormant, and then we got some rain. So it's been a great year for our lawns, and that's very good news, especially if you haven't fertilized. The other point about fertilizer is in fertilizing your lawns is that part of that recommendation that they've made from this research is the difference between older lawns and younger lawns. If you have been regularly fertilizing your lawn for 15 years, at that point, you don't need to fertilize as much because of the bank of nutrients that is being held in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So the not getting in this last fertilizer application this year probably isn't as big a deal. And then you couple that with the good year growing season we had, I think our lawns are going to be okay.
Yeah, I was had a great growing season. I use a mulching mower.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm mulching those leaves right into the lawn grass, and there's a little fertilizer there, too.
Actually, that's the equivalent of one application of fertilizer a year. It comes from those clippings going back into the lawn.
So between the clippings and the leaves, probably okay anyway.
Yeah.
The lawn looks pretty darn good, and you're right. Mm-hmm. Didn't go dormant. My lawn didn't go dormant ever this year. So. Lisa in Amberg has a question for you. Hi, Lisa. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I have two questions, actually, if I can do that. One on currants and one on hydrangeas.
Okay.
Okay, I need to know what kind of hydrangea it is that blooms in a very large shrub form, and it forms like cone shape. They turn really pretty and pink in the fall. They're white, but they tend to turn pink, and then they dry and stay on the shrub, and you can cut them off for flower decorations and such.
That's exactly the kind I want to replace my hydrangeas with, and I believe that is tardiva.
Tardiva.
Tardiva is the cultivar of that. They do have others, but it's one of the paniculata types, so it's hydrangea paniculata tardiva, and it does have that cone-shaped flower head. I'm trying to think of, there are some other ones that have come out that have other characteristics to go along with that. But, Limelight is another one of those, but it is a smaller stature, has smaller flower heads, and they do stay greener more of the time, and I don't think they get the good red fall color. So, I know they're just beautiful right now.
Okay, the other question I have is my whole side of my yard is covered. It's edged with woods. It's like a cedar swamp, but it's in the front of that, on the edge of that, where the woods start. I am loaded with wild black currants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the spring, they are covered with flowers, but I get almost no fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to have full sun or a good amount of sun? Because it's on the north side of the woods, and it gets very little direct sun.
Well, that's my guess. I think they do have to have full sun. Most of our fruit crops do. That's what it takes.
And I'm going to move them.
There you go. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks a lot for calling. Ron in Boston has a question. Hi, Ron. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Yes, I planted some fruit trees this year. Most of them were bare root. Some of them were in pots. Obviously, I took them out of the pot to plant them. And I'm wondering, what would be the best thing to help them through the winter?
And what are these again? I'm sorry.
Fruit trees. There's three apples, two pears, two peaches, and a plum.
Okay. First of all, I would make sure that you cut the, if there's any grass or weeds growing around the base of the trees, cut that down very short. And secondly, I would protect the trunk. I would put maybe hardware cloth in a cylinder of hardware cloth with small, relatively small openings around the base of the trunk up to a foot or so if you can. They also have those plastic trunk guards. Those are a good idea because rabbits and mice love to eat the bark of fruit trees over the winter.
So those are important. But then mulching over the root zone if they've just been planted is probably not a bad idea. And you could put a couple of inches of a wood chip mulch or straw or leaves or compost, but just don't have it up near the trunk where mice can, you know, make a little home right up against the trunk and sit there merrily eating the bark all winter long. So you have to protect the trunk, but you could put some mulch over the root system because that disturbed soil that you, from having planted them, it's going to absorb more moisture. It's looser and more open. The snow and freezing and thawing will potentially heave the plant a little bit. So kind of as a general rule, I recommend people put a winter mulch on. But don't do this until the ground freezes with the mulch. I would do the trunk protection as soon as you can, you know, whenever you're able to get out there and do it. And cleaning up around the base of the trunk is important now because this is when the mice are out there looking for their winter home. And if you can prevent them from doing that at the base of your tree, you're a step ahead.
You're way ahead of the game then.
Yeah.
Good luck, Ron. Thanks for calling. Stanley in West Allis, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, Larry and your guest. Thanks for answering my call.
Sure.
I came home from a garden center, which I almost always bring something home with me.
No.
And this time I brought a baby butterfly bush. I'll call it a baby because it's only about, maybe 12 inches, 13 inches tall.
Uh-huh.
It's in a pot that's big enough for it and everything.
Uh-huh.
And I've grown some in the West Allis area a couple years ago, and they got up to 8. I think I had two of them that were 8 foot tall.
Oh my goodness!
And they spread out quite a bit, and they're just beautiful.
Yeah.
And anyway, they decided they didn't want to live anymore. They croaked.
Oh dear!
After about the third year, they just kind of like dried up.
What, mm-hmm. These 8 foot ones?
Yeah. So anyway, I've got a new one here, and I'm taking it up north about almost 200 miles, and the winter gets pretty cold up there. It's gotten, I think, as cold as 30 below.
Yeah.
And anyway, this says on the tag, hardiness minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So what would be the best way to plant it? Put it as deep as I can?
No. Depth isn't going to help. What you're going to have to do is to insulate it. You're going to have to pack it with some straw, some leaves, something. And maybe, you know, because of what it says on the tag is accurate. In fact, it may be even stretching it to minus 20. It may not make it beyond zero or minus 10. You could treat it a lot like you would tender roses, where you put mulch over the root zone of the plant, you mound up some soil around the base, then I would encircle it with chicken wire, a good-sized cage of chicken wire around it that you've pinned down to the ground with some stakes or something, and then make sure that none of the branches are rubbing against that cage, and then stuff the whole cage with straw or leaves. Either one of them is good, but, you know, kind of pack it in there, not super tight, but enough to provide some good insulation. And then in the spring, gradually remove that as it starts to leaf out, if it's going to. But butterfly bush leaves out very late, and so it starts its growth. And I'm sure none of the stems above ground are going to leaf out. I'm pretty sure that's not going to work. But if it can come from the root system, that's what you're going to hope for. But as I say, you won't really know until everything else will be emerged and starting to grow, so don't give up on it too early. And that's about the best I can suggest for you, because it really is not hardy to that kind. It's barely hardy in this area.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, so you're going to be really pushing it. But with some extra tender loving care, you might be able to get it through.
Thanks, Stanley, for calling. Appreciate it very much. We got a Facebook question from Desiree. My daisies decided to bloom in the beginning of October and are still growing strong. Is this normal?
Well, it's normal when we have weather like we've had. And that is totally what's going on with that. We have had many reports of many different things that are flowering this fall that normally wouldn't be flowering. We have crabapple trees reflowering. We have lilacs reflowering. We have perennials reflowering. And your daisies are among them. And nothing wrong with that. It's not hurting a thing. Enjoy them while they're there. Once they've frozen back, treat them like you ordinarily would. It's strictly because of the weather conditions we've had. I think part of it was that we had such a nice summer with ample moisture and, you know, no really hot periods until the very end. And then we had some really hot weather for a couple of weeks, and then it got cool. And that hot period, I think, you know, told plants that it's time to start growing again, especially once it got cool again.
Yep, there we go. We had, here's a question from Laura in Milwaukee, who's also in your Master Gardener class.
Oh.
What is the best way to keep insects from coming into the house and affecting other indoor plants?
Well, don't bring them in on any indoor plants that you're bringing in with you. That's one thing. So clean those plants off before you bring them in. I hope you've brought your plants in already. And if they're already in, then treat what's in there. But as far as bringing insects in or having insects come into the house, sealing up all of those cracks, any kinds of entryways at the bases of doors and windowsills along the basement sill plate, that's where insects get into the house in the winter, and this is the time they're doing it because they know it's winter and they're going to need to find a warmer place to survive the winter. But if you're bringing them in with house plants or you've got them in on your house plants already, treating those with an insecticidal soap is one good way to do it, or to just kind of wash them off with in the shower, even just by literally putting your plants into your shower, maybe covering the soil with plastic bags or tinfoil or something to, you know, keep it from splashing up and going down your drain, and then really wash them off really, really well. And that'll go a long way to taking care of any of those insects.
We had an email question from Byron. Our townhouse association lawn service just last week cut down all of our hosta plants. Is it okay to cut down hostas before the first frost?
Yes, it is. No worries. Hostas are pretty hardy little plants, and they have already moved a lot of stored carbohydrates down into their roots. They will be fine.
Oh, excellent. And Dennis in Sussex, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have an 11-month-old shepherd pup that when I play tennis, when I throw a tennis ball for him in the backyard, he digs in his claws and he pulls up the grass in chunks like carpet samples. And I don't seem to have, like, any root structure. I just wondered if you could give me some direction on how to build a better lawn. I fertilize periodically, you know, like with Turf Builder, and I put winterizer down in the fall, but it is a shady area with a lot of oaks.
If that gets, boy, oh boy, that seems excessive if your dog can just pull that up in chunks.
If it's when he digs his claws in when he slides after the tennis ball, it just comes up.
Okay. Well, what do you think, Sharon?
Well, and also that last statement you made that there's an area, it's an area with a lot of old oaks in it, shade is going to make it much more difficult to get grass to grow and to have a good, dense root system. Thinning out the canopies of the oaks is one option, getting more sunlight in there. Now, in that area, from what I know of it, you have relatively sandy or gravelly soil. Isn't that right? Or do you have clay soil?
I would say it's more clay, but, you know, with the oak forest, it's built up, you know, like a organic type soil.
Right. Because in a heavy soil, you may be able to improve it by doing some core aeration, which is tough around the roots of trees. So that kind of makes that even maybe not so practical. But anything you can do to get the grass to grow better by fertilizing regularly, not watering it too much, not fertilizing it too much either. People have a tendency in shade to want to fertilize it more to make it grow better because it's not growing so well. But really what you need to do is cut back on the fertilizer because otherwise you get this lush, kind of weak growth. So you would do maybe three-quarters of the fertilizer that you would do in a sunny area.
Is there any different kind of fertilizer I should use besides, like, turf builder?
No, that'll probably fine, but be sure that you use it at a lower rate, three-quarter to one-half the rate that they're recommending each time you fertilize. And that might help, and core aerating, if you can do that, might help. Otherwise, yeah, cut his nails.
There we go. Thanks, Dennis. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, Brenda in Union Grove, what is on your mind? Hi.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, we have hot peppers that we grow, and they are the extremely hot peppers, and it seems that we don't have a long enough growing season to have them actually produce a lot of fruit. So last year what we decided to do is to bring them down into the basement. So sometime about March all the leaves fell off, and they died.
Oh.
And this year we decided to rig up a little room with a grow light in it.
Yeah.
And we're hoping for the best. Is there anything else we should do?
Well,
they're beautiful big plants. Hate to lose them.
Nice. I have a neighbor who pots up her peppers and puts them in kind of a sunny windowsill, a ledge, sort of a bay window setting, and she does carry hers through the winter that way. But I think she's just lucky with the amount of light she gets in there. The grow light will definitely help. And have it as close to the foliage as you can. It can't be like 3, 4, 5 feet above the foliage. Put it, 4 inches is what they say, above the foliage. And other than that, don't over-fertilize.
Okay.
Because they're not going to be growing real vigorously, and the nitrogen
will
accumulate too much growth. So you just want to keep them growing, and I think the grow light's going to make all the difference for you.
Oh, yeah, I do too. Good luck, Brenda. Thanks a lot for calling. You can call us back in the spring and let us know.
Yeah.
If they made it. Thank you. Sue in Oregon, thank you for calling. Hi. Sue, are you there?
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. I have an old clematis plant that has gotten very, very woody and overgrown. Is it okay if I trim that back this winter and let it start from the bottom, or will it only bloom from the old growth?
Yeah, that's the question, is whether it only blooms from old growth or not. But if it's really, really overgrown, you might have to sacrifice flowers for a year in order to kind of get it back into shape. So if you know what the variety is, then you can look up which of the pruning groups it is. Some clematis bloom on only new wood. Some produce flowers only on old wood, and some do some of each. So that determines how you prune it. But if it's really, really overgrown and out of shape and you need to control it, cutting it all the way back would stimulate it to grow again next year and then go from there.
And there you go. And thanks very much for calling. And to Will in Jefferson, who wants to know if he should pick his apples before the frost, you were saying earlier, yes, do that.
Yeah, I think so. Get them in.
Sharon, it's always such a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoy it. Thanks so much for having me as a guest, Larry.
Ah, well, it's always fun. Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. Man, she really knows her stuff, as do the other UW Extension Hort agents that we have. They're really a very, very knowledgeable and friendly bunch, and it's always fun to have them on the show. And certainly we'll be continuing to do that. Monday at 11, we're going to talk about how to reduce lower back pain with physical therapy. So looking forward to that. And in the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.